It is 8:30. We have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat This Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right. Plenty to cover as usual, starting out with our very own Governor Christine Gregoire.
Oh, yeah. She announced this, well, she kind of got leaked in the press, that she's considering a new jobs plan for the state. Her jobs plan is
that's good. I'm in favor of jobs.
Yeah, her idea of a jobs plan is to push the state legislature to pass a bond measure, which would go to voters. And the bond measure would be for funding construction projects around the state. The interesting part about this is that the legislature itself could pass a bond measure for her signature, but if they did that, then the bonds issued under that measure would be subject to the state's constitutional limits on debt. However, if a bond measure goes to the voters, there it's not subject to the limits on debt. In other words, what Gregoire is saying is that in a year when she has said that she will not ask for a tax increase, what she's saying is she doesn't want to go to the boss for a raise. She wants to take out a second mortgage instead. And I'm just going to take a minute here to point out that there's two ways to pay off bonds over time. Either you pay them off by, especially when you're adding excess debt to the limits imposed by the Constitution of the state, there are two ways to pay them off. Either you divert revenues from other services in the state budget to pay off your debts, or you raise taxes. So essentially, what she's doing is she's saying, let's borrow now so that we can raise taxes later. It's really confounding. And it's interesting, too, because this is the very thing that Americans have been doing on a personal level that has led largely to this economic crisis. And here's the state governor saying, gosh, let's do that, too, on the state level.
The thing that fascinates me about this is that nobody in Olympia, and I'm going to rant about the Democratic leadership about Olympia in a minute, but I'll put that off for the moment. Nobody is raising the specter of closing any of the massive numbers of huge tax loopholes that give big corporate welfare breaks to major employers in this state. You know, the Boeings and Microsofts and, you know, right on down the food chain. You know, one by one by one, and we've chronicled some of them on this program the last few years, all of these different corporations have come to the Democratic governors and the Democratic-controlled legislators and said, we want our portion of the cookie jar. And when you hit a rough economic patch, as we have, those kind of perks should be the first thing to go, but they don't even seem to be on the table. Instead, we're talking about this kind of, you know, request for a shared sacrifice, not even on the backs of ordinary taxpayers, although there's that too, but on our kids and our kids' kids.
Yeah.
I do remember, though, back in January, Governor Gregoire came out, they had it on the TV, where she was asking regular citizens to submit their ideas for how the state could save money. Maybe people just need to do that a little more publicly.
Need to do that a little more often.
A little louder.
Yeah.
Did they disclose any of the suggestions?
Well, I don't know about that.
No.
I haven't seen much of any follow-up.
How do we know that people didn't make that suggestion?
They very well might have. It'd be nice to find out what the follow-through on that was, if any. All right. Other
send your comments to Wastebasket, care of the Governor's Mansion, Olympia,
circular
Washington,
file.
98502.
Speaking of Governor Gregoire, she received some attention this week from a SEIU local.
Oh, yeah. At least one group of citizens has made clear what they think the governor ought to do regarding the budget. SEIU Local 775 is suing Governor Gregoire in state Supreme Court. They want her to redraft her budget to include contractual pay raises for home health care workers. These are pay raises that home health care workers won in arbitration this past year. And the SEIU is saying that Governor Gregoire is legally bound to include those pay raises in the budget. Now, we're talking about pretty modest pay raises. Home health care workers make about $10 an hour. And the pay raises involve a 2.5% increase in 2009 plus a 2% increase in 2010. Very, very modest increases that would total about $80 million in the state budget, which is a drop in the bucket when you're talking about the billions and billions that the state of Washington spends every year. And as Jav was saying, you could close one or two of those corporate tax loopholes for employers like Boeing or Microsoft, in particular Boeing, who right after receiving one of the biggest tax breaks in the state in the history of the state of Washington, promptly relocated their corporate headquarters to Chicago. I think it's time
to... they got more huge tax breaks.
Yeah, I think it's time to say, sorry guys, the free ride is over. We need that money, and we need it for people who don't make nearly as much as you do.
Didn't I read in the paper that the president of Boeing this week or for last year made 14 point something million dollars for his efforts?
Is that all?
Yeah, I understand. If you open up the Seattle Times this morning, you'll see that Boeing is given its execs pay raises, even though they didn't have such a banner and profitable year last year. So maybe some of those executive pay raises at Boeing could go for a better cause.
I would think the pay raise that's going to any one of those executives could probably cover a good chunk of the cost of living increases for every health home care worker in the state.
Yeah.
Just speculation.
Yeah. So at the SEIU, they're hoping that they're also lobbying Democrats in the legislature to add this back into the budget, which they can do. And if the legislature fails and the court rules against them, then the SEIU will probably try to take this to the voters on the ballot this year. There are plenty of other things that could be going on the ballot too this year, including that bond measure that Gregoire would like, her so-called jobs plan.
Now if the governor is already ignoring binding arbitration in budgeting for this pay increase, which is the law of the land, is mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but that would seem to me to be kind of open and shut. Why on earth would they pay attention to an initiative passed by voters? They certainly didn't do that when the teacher raises were passed.
That's a good question. It's a very good question.
All right. Moving on, the Washington State Labor Council.
Yeah, the Washington State Labor Council, this was not a good week for labor in Olympia. They're in a little email imbroglio with the state Democratic Party leaders, Christine Gregoire, the governor, and also the speakers of the House and the Senate, Lisa Brown and Frank Chopp. This all stems from something called the Workers' Privacy Act, which is a piece of legislation that's very important to labor leaders, but which state Democratic Party leaders really don't like, and they are looking for an excuse to kill it, basically. And what they seized upon was an email that was circulated by Washington State Labor Council leaders to their lobbyists and to legislators who were co-sponsors of the bill, saying, you know, if the legislature doesn't pass this, we're going to have to reevaluate how much money we give to Democrats in the future. Well, the state Democratic Party leadership cried foul at this and expressed moral outrage over what they claimed were threats by the State Labor Council, and actually asked the Washington State Patrol, the police agency, to investigate the State Labor Council for this, for what is, you know, really, by any calculation, and you can say what you want about how the system works, but that is how our system works. And until we have publicly financed elections, which our state Democratic Party doesn't seem very interested in promoting, you know, you're going to continue to have this where interest groups funnel money to legislators who support their agenda. Shock. I'm outraged. I'm appalled. it really raises a couple of fundamental questions. Number one, why isn't there this kind of outrage on behalf of the state Democratic Party leadership, many of whom benefited from this sort of thing, when this is done by, say, the BIAW or any number of other business lobbies that are out there that do this sort of thing all the time, usually in not such genteel language? The other thing this raises is, why do you have a budget that's being balanced on the back of the most disenfranchised members of our society? And you can look at any number of budget line items and reach that conclusion around, you know, cuts to social services, the issue we were mentioning a little while ago about home health care workers, you know, all the way down the line, but not examine the corporate tax breaks. You know, the Democratic Party leadership in this state seems very, very anxious, even though they have the governor's mansion by a solid majority. I've had the governor's mansion for 20 years, even though they have huge supermajorities in both chambers in Olympia. You know, they're governing like they're afraid of losing Republican votes. They're not going to get any additional Republican votes. The people who are still voting for Republicans in this state, pretty likely to keep doing that. But they seem more concerned about not alienating those people so much to the effect that they are willing to stiff arm the people who are their most fervent supporters and biggest constituents. And in the case of the State Labor Council, not only doing that and not only saying in private, hey, we really didn't appreciate that, let's talk this thing through, but instead, you know, not just throwing them under the bus, but sticking the state police on them. I mean, what is going on in Olympia? It just doesn't seem, it seems like a very odd way to, kowtow to your opponents and trash your constituents and your biggest supporters when you are in fact supposedly legislating and leading from a position of power. It strikes me as, you know, the actions of a party that's out of power rather than a party that controls every level of government.
All right. Finally, wrapping up on local, the mayor's race and city council races. Updates on that?
Yeah, some good news this week. Well, mixed news anyway for some people. Nick Licata, who is widely expected to retire this year, he's been on city council for 12 years now, announced that he is going to run for another term on city council. That's good news, because if Licata had retired, that left as a very uncertain prospects as to whether we would have any progressives on city council in this coming year. We have David Bloom running for city council, and of course there's still plenty of time for other progressives to jump in the race, but there would certainly be no incumbents and nobody of Licata's stature who would be on council. The bad part of that is that there were a number of people who were urging Nick to run for mayor instead, and he decided, I think probably fairly wisely, not to do that. Licata is I mean, he was born to be a legislator. He loves the collaborative process. I think he's much happier doing that and working over the minutiae that the city council often deals with. He was, after all, an insurance broker in his previous life, and those kind of skills have served him very well on city council. I think he's much happier doing that than calling the shots for the executive branch. So that leaves the question, who, in fact, if anybody, is going to run against Mayor Nichols? We've seen Nick Licata decide not to run. A lot of people have also been urging Peter Steinbrück to run. He has not ruled it out so far, simply I think because he's getting so much pressure to consider it. But he also, for personal reasons, doesn't seem that enthusiastic about taking on the job. Phil Talmadge has already said no. Several other progressives have already said no. On the conservative side of the ledger, Tim Burgess started testing the waters and then discovered that he would be tapping for donations some of the same pool of people who are already supporting Greg Nichols and have been tied up by him. So nobody has really stepped forward to take on Greg Nichols who has any kind of name recognition or political traction. That may be changing because the word at this point is that not Sam Donaldson, he's the reporter, James Donaldson, the former basketball player, who had already announced some months ago that he's running for city council, has now let it be known in the sort of regal way that some former athletes have, that he may consider jumping over to the mayoral race instead. The problem with this, of course, is that nobody really knows who James Donaldson is, other than that when he was young, he played basketball for a team that no longer exists, and he is, in fact, very tall. You know, and he may have done fine and wonderful things in the interim, but most people don't really have any familiarity with that, don't know where he stands, don't know how he would line up against Greg Nichols. And, you know, that can be for better or worse. It could mean he could be very good. It could mean he could be very uninspiring. But for the time being, his is really the only name that's being thrown around that seems like he's going to be any kind of a credible challenger whatsoever. And this is a man who has no electoral experience, and his celebrity race raises on the fact that, you know, he played with a ball when he was in his 20s. I don't know how much of a credible challenger that makes him, but he does have some name recognition as a result of that. So
just what we need.
So that's, yeah. If he campaigns on bringing the Sonics back, I'd be,
he'll probably
not
get a lot of votes,
but disappointed.
All right. Let's move on to national and this week's economic news.
Yeah, this week we had President Obama and Treasury Secretary Geithner calling for European nations to spend, just like we have to try to boost the world economy.
Because misery loves company.
Yes. And Obama would like him to do two things, to up their contributions to the IMF to $500 billion. The U.S. is going to double its own contribution to $100 billion of that, and Obama would like European governments and other governments around the world to increase their government spending at home, just like we have with our recent economic stimulus bill and various Treasury initiatives to pour money into banks to try to recapitalize them. But, of course, European nations see the whole economic downturn as being caused by problems in the U.S. that we have to fix, mostly related to the fact that we have been spending too much money as a nation.
And have had no regulatory oversight of that.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, the European Union, they don't want to run up huge levels of government debt in their separate countries, because that means that the big European nations like France, Germany, the U.K., et cetera, are worried that they're going to have to bail out the smaller European Union nations if they run up too much government debt.
Particularly Eastern Europe, which is in all kinds of financial hurt right now.
Yeah. And as Job said, you know, regulation is the key, according to other nations in the world. They look at the U.S. and they say, look, the problem started with you guys because you haven't been regulating your financial industry. And here we've got these huge multinational corporations like Citigroup, AIG, Deutsche Bank, all these big international financial organizations that are subject to various laws in various countries, but there's no overarching regulatory apparatus to oversee them or control them.
And not only that, but the companies have learned very effectively how to play the regulations of one country off against another and look for the most favorable circumstances.
Right. So with the G20 summit coming up in April, the European nations are proposing something that's really the opposite of what the WTO was. The WTO, or the World Trade Organization, was supposed to be an overarching global organization that would help take down trade barriers and allow capitalism to operate unfettered throughout the world, really, and you know, arbitrate disputes between nations over trade barriers, etc. And what the European Union is now proposing is that we have an overarching regulatory body that would oversee the financial industry worldwide, establish some kind of regulations that apply wherever these companies go, and would provide some kind of oversight so that this doesn't happen again, so that one nation like the United States cannot bring down the whole world economy as it apparently is doing right now. And of course, that's something that Obama is terrified of, and that American business would not like to see at all. And of course, these major corporations are fighting tooth and nail and are having some effect in Congress on some of the legislation that Obama and the Democrats have proposed by, for example, watering down the current bankruptcy legislation that's making its way through Congress right now.
Yeah, in other words, 10 years out, the European Union is saying, oh, those protesters in Seattle, they were right. The interesting thing about this is that back home in the United States, where we're part of the problem, not the solution, we had the Treasury Department announcing this week that there will be no detailed regulatory plan forthcoming before the G20 summit in April, which of course is something that the EU and other industrial nations very much wanted to see out of the United States. There might be broad brushes, but there won't be any kind of detail as to what that plan looks like. This from an administration that prided itself on hitting the ground running, planning ahead of time to make sure that, for example, the largest spending bill in the history of, in our modern history got passed through Congress in 3 weeks. But when it comes to actually reinstituting regulatory reform, that seems to have gotten to the bottom of the list.
Yeah, yes.
And as a matter of fact, you know, every month that this goes on is another month that companies can continue their predatory practices, can continue to do the things that caused this economic meltdown to take place in the first place, and can continue to do so without any threat of oversight or of being reined in by regulators or by the law or by Washington, D.C. So there are very real profits being made at the very real expense of little guys in the economy while this dithering takes place. And it's really an appalling demonstration of priorities on behalf of the Obama administration.
Yeah, and of course the U.S. government continues to hemorrhage money to try to prop up these big banks. China warned this week that the U.S. should stop that spending spree because it's beginning to devalue the dollar and threaten China's investment in U.S. government treasuries. Now, just to put this in perspective, China has huge foreign currency reserves. They're basically the main supplier of the world economy. Everybody buys from them. All of that cash flows into their coffers, and then they have to reinvest it somewhere in the world economy. They have invested about half their foreign currency reserves, or some $1 trillion in U.S. treasuries. And, of course, the more money the U.S. government spends, the more they have to borrow, which means they have to issue more U.S. treasuries. The more U.S. treasuries that are up for sale on the market, the lower the price goes, the more that threatens the value of the Chinese investment in the U.S. government.
Yeah, and you had the prime minister of China, Wen Jiabao, saying this week that he was worried about the safety of that $1 trillion that's invested in the U.S. economy. When you have, you know, the entity that holds a big chunk of your foreign debt saying that they're worried about the safety of their holdings, that's a huge warning signal for Washington.
Yeah, and you know, we really can't afford to have the Chinese government and Chinese government-controlled businesses look elsewhere for places to park their cash, because right now they're the guys who are bailing us out and helping us try to bail our own financial industry out. So, you know, when they start speaking in public about, hey, wait a minute, this spend idea isn't such a good idea, well, maybe we ought to be listening. And I just want to wrap up the economic report this week by talking about some numbers. There were two reports issued this week. First, from the Asian Development Bank, that said that in 2008, some $50 trillion was wiped off the value of global financial assets. The second report was from the Federal Reserve, their quarterly flow of funds report. They said that Americans saw 18% of their wealth disappear in 2008, and that's a total of about $11 trillion, which is equal to the combined annual output of Germany, Japan, and the UK. So my question is, you can look at those numbers and go, oh my God, it's so bad. But really, the real question is, was that real wealth to begin with? Yeah. I want to just remind people of Vikram Pandit's quote last week saying that there wasn't enough cash in the whole world to drive the kind of growth that the world economy needs, so we have to turn to securitizing debt, basically taking something that should be a liability and turning it into an asset, basically creating fake money. Well, that's not real growth. That is not real growth.
It's called a Ponzi scheme.
That's just lots of debt. And, of course, the problem is we buried ourselves in debt, and now we have to start digging ourselves out. Seems like the way to go is not to spend.
All right. This week, Job, you had something on the Labor Department?
Very briefly, because we're running a little short on time, but the Labor Department's saying that 5.3 million Americans are now collecting unemployment benefits. That's not the actual number of people who are unemployed, mind you, just the number of people who are getting benefits. That's maybe half of the real number. It's a huge number of people who are out of work right now, and that just really underlines what a bad situation we're in.
All right. Moves us on to international and Pakistan.
Yeah, it was another aerial drone bombing this week. At least 22 people dead in northwest Pakistan. And very interesting in the reports on this. I noticed this in the New York Times and other media sources as well. They're talking about these aerial predator drones as being launched from Afghanistan, when we know, in fact, that that's not true, that they are, in fact, operating from Pakistani air bases. And the U.S. and the Pakistani government seem to be very, very anxious to maintain the fiction that this is an invasion of Pakistani sovereignty, when in fact it's happening with the active complicity of the Pakistani government, which is a fact that is certainly known in that part of the world and certainly alienating a lot of their critics.
All right. And El Salvador.
Yeah, elections tomorrow in El Salvador. Not surprisingly, because it's become a fine tradition, particularly in the Republican side of the aisle ever since the days of Ronald Reagan. Congressional Republicans in particular are trying to intervene in the El Salvadoran election on behalf of the conservative Arena Party, saying things like, well, if Arena is elected to power, we won't allow El Salvadorans to repatriate their money home when they work abroad, which is a huge threat, because some quarter of El Salvador's economy comes from Salvadorans who are working in the United States legally or illegally and sending money home. That election happening tomorrow, the local CISPAS has some observers down there, so it'll be interesting to see what they have to say when they come back.
All right. And our ocean levels. We're in deep water financially and apparently in other ways as well.
We seem to talk about this about every other week, about the current bad news and when it comes to climate change. Some scientists from four nations who were meeting at a climate change conference in Copenhagen got together for a press conference where they announced that, yes, we do agree, scientists from the U.S., Australia, and other nations, we do agree that world ocean levels are rising faster than the U.N. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had announced in 2007. They're rising approximately twice as fast, and according to recent data that's come in. And this bodes very ill for nations that are low-lying areas, like in Bangladesh, Burma, Egypt, island nations of the Pacific, river estuaries around the world, including in developed nations like, for example, the Thames Estuary in Britain, where London sits, and places like New York Harbor,
Miami, South Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and downtown Seattle, for example.
Yeah, it will stimulate the economy, because real estate speculators will have all this new waterfront property in Nevada that they can hawk.
And you know, we're busy building the mile-long downtown underground traffic tunnel that will become the mile-long underground aquarium.
The mile-long underwater traffic tunnel.
Yes.
Instead of the big bore, we'll call it the big dig. We'll call it the big glub.
All right. This week's events.
Yeah, several of them to talk about today. 1 o'clock, the ACLU's annual membership conference is being held at the Intiman Theater, 2nd and Mercer. The keynote will be Guantanamo lawyer Jeff Robinson, so check that out. Tonight, 7 o'clock, a fundraiser for the Ali Hospital in Gaza. That's being held at St. Mark's Cathedral on 10th Avenue up on Capitol Hill. Tomorrow from noon to 6 at Westlake Park in downtown Seattle, there will be a cooperative fair with all sorts of different groups talking about sustainable, non-economic ways that nonprofits can help each other out and such. And Eat the State will be at that, weather permitting. And then Thursday night at 8 p.m., Seattle First Baptist Church is having a peace conference to mark the 6th anniversary. Is it 6 years already since the invasion of Iraq? Well, yes, it is. And they'll be having a concert with the Seattle Peace Chorus and classical music and other good stuff. And then there will be a number of demonstrations next week that we'll talk about next Saturday.
All right. Talking, as we do every week, with Job Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State can be found in bookstores, coffee shops, cafes, places where you find free periodicals and publications. We can also be found online at www.eatthestate.org.